the coronavirus quarantine, are you a minister struggling to put together a compelling online service? Have your members started to tune out on your church's YouTube video channel as they discover larger churches somewhere else in your town or maybe across the country that have better production values? Are you feeling like your appearance is just not camera friendly for this sudden transition to video worship? Well, New Creation Video has the solution for you. We take seriously the words of the Apostle Paul, who wrote, "Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. Old things have passed away. Behold, all things have become new." At New Creation Video, we'll make your online church service into a new creation by replacing your wrinkles, dark circles under your eyes, spare tire around the middle, and the poor job your wife did cutting your hair at home during the quarantine with an actor who happens to be handsome, youthful-looking, and exquisitely coiffed. He will assume your identity and give your sermon online. Through the magic of CGI, we will paste him into your sanctuary, pronouncing the word of God. Watch as your online collection goes up, just because people no longer have to look at your sorry mug. The New Creation Video package practically pays for itself. For an added fee, New Creation will let you pick your actor. Perhaps you'd like to look like Chris Evans. If your church is more casual about pastoral attire, we can put you, or at least your Chris Evans-looking actor, into that awesome sweater Chris Evans wore on Knives Out. Maybe you'd rather look like Matt Damon, or if you're older, we can make you look like a 60-year-old Alan Alda. Or if you need a little more overtly masculine look, we can make you look like Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Unfortunately, our selection of non-Anglo actors is very limited. We only have Dwayne The Rock Johnson, Sherman Hemsley from the 80s TV show Amen, or Ken Jeong, Judge of the Masked Singer. If your church allows female clergy to preach, we can help you as well. Pick our Angelina Jolie-looking actor to appeal to all the aspiring, do-it-all working soccer moms out there. If you're older, why not look like Helen Mirren? Older, but still attractive to younger men. Our package for female clergy may cost more, but let's face it, as a female minister, you're always judged way more harshly than your male ministerial colleagues on how you look and dress, so we feel like the cost is well worthwhile. Is your church sanctuary too drab-looking as a backdrop? We can help you with that, too. We'll place your actor preaching in Joel Osteen's basketball arena. Or you can go old school and be in Robert Schuller's Crystal Cathedral. After all, most of your church members are old enough that they always wish they attended at the Crystal Cathedral anyway. If that's too boring, we can put you in an edgy industrial space so you can look like some kind of new hip church start. You can also splurge for our Harry Potter package. We'll put that attractive actor version of you into downtown Hogsmeade outside the Three Broomsticks pub. Our other exclusive packages include the attractive actor version of you preaching from Emperor Palpatine's throne room on the Death Star in Return of the Jedi. Or your attractive actor can preach from the set of ABC's The Bachelor. You'll be sure to get a rose, or help keep parents watching by keeping their young ones entertained. We'll put you in a Paw Patrol episode. You, or the attractive actor version of you, can preach while Rocky, Rubble, Marshall, and Zuma act out your Bible story in the background. Visit the website of New Creation Video, and we hope you will take a look at our Zoom video add-ons. We can take the attractive actor version of you and insert him into Zoom Bible studies and church council meetings. If you're willing to pay a little more, your unattractive church members can also be replaced with visually stunning actors as well. You'll all be glad now to look at one another while feeling good about your stand-in actors, making you look good. With New Vision Video, everyone can stay in the same sweatpants they've been wearing for 13 days, while your attractive actor selves present a good image to everyone else. Coming soon, stressed out clergy can subscribe to our sermon series, where we write the sermons for you. agitated, anxious, and uninterested church leaders can pre-program their responses to typical church meeting happenings as well. Why show up and feel anxious when you already know what you're going to say in a church board meeting anyway? Choose from our selection of church meeting responses, like, "Last month's income was how small? What are we going to do?" Or, "If only we had more young families coming to church." Or, "I remember how church was like when I was young. Church was so much better then." Or, "Why are we not attending to fixing the building problems? We're spending too much money on church staff and ministries outside the church." Or, "Why are we paying the pastor so much money when he only works one day a week?" Or, "Why are the teenagers always staring at their phones?" Wait a minute, I've got a comment in my friend's Facebook post. I'll finish my thought in a second. If you're supposed to attend an online Bible study, just pre-program your responses to occur at regular intervals. The answer is Jesus Christ. It always comes down to Jesus Christ. Or, "My mother always said, everything happens for a reason." Or, "My father always said, God helps those who help themselves." Or, "I think we are living in the end times." For an added fee, we can personalize your Bible study comment. That reminds me what I saw on the news last night. We will insert a summary of a news story from your preferred cable news provider, CNN, MSNBC, or Fox. Or how about this response? "Yesterday, I saw a Facebook post about that." And we will insert one of the most popular memes on Facebook that day. New Creation Video is not responsible for our computerized meme selection process. If your meme contains swearing and/or nudity, or is something only 13-year-olds understand, we apologize. There's no end to the possibilities New Creation Video can provide. Pretty soon, your church can look authentic in a totally inauthentic way. Make your passive online church experience even more passive. New Creation Video Ministries, where every minister, church, and church member can be a new creation. We at New Creation Video Ministries want female and LGBTQ clergy to know we support your call to ministry. However, there are so few churches who call female clergy and have the budget to afford our products that we only offer a limited selection for women who are called to ministry. We also apologize to our LGBTQ clergy for offering no products tailored for you at all. There are just too few churches who call LGBTQ ministers for us to offer products for you and still make lots and lots of money for us. Hello, Save Me folks. How you doing? This is Chase Peoples coming in here at episode 4 of the Save Me podcast. Well, not much has changed in the world, in my world. I'm still feeling helpless about the things about myself I struggle to change and feel overwhelmed by. White privilege, male privilege, heterosexual privilege, I've got all the privileges. Looking at our climate change doesn't help that we've got coronavirus going on. Talk about things you feel helpless about and want somebody to save me. I went out yesterday and made a venture into Target, and it was terrifying. I was one of the only people wearing masks yesterday, and not even the employees were wearing masks. And so it was a weird thing. You're in the grocery aisles. There is no room for social distancing. And I know I'm out here in the Midwest, but come on. I am just shocked that nobody seems to be taking it seriously. Or maybe all the folks who are just staying home and not going to Target. And what also hasn't changed is I am a middle-aged minister, and I have committed myself to working in mainline Christianity, which is a dying field, and have no idea what I'm going to be doing to pay the bills the next 20 years if I am allowed to work so long. Still trying to figure all that. A little news over the last week. I do have some good news. Vocationally, I've taken a gig as an interim minister. in the Kansas City area. If you're not the minister type, the interim minister, if you don't know, is the person who steps in between the long-term pastors who have been called by churches. It seems like a great church. I haven't gotten to meet that many people so far. It's sort of like being on a blind date where I'm literally blind and can't see anybody. I preach to a basically empty sanctuary on Sunday, and who knows how many people watched on the live stream. But yes, I have joined the masses of clergy struggling to send out emails and videos and have Zoom meetings and stuff like that. So I need content, lots of content to be able to share. This church, it's an interesting experience for me because they still have a ton of volunteers doing stuff. And they still have Sunday school classes for adults, I mean, women's circles. It feels like I have gone back in time to 5 to 10 years before I ever showed up at a church to work. In my experience, usually I have showed up to be pastor at a time when all of the older folks who are volunteering and doing everything and have kept the church running for decades have moved off the scene, either through dying or aging, or they're just burnt out, or maybe they move away to be with adult children and grandchildren. And so there's a vacuum of leadership and crisis. I have stepped into that at 2 churches. That's not a fun time. Maybe this congregation will have what it takes to adapt to that future heading their way very quickly. I have no idea what that kind of adaptation looks like or what the answers are, but it seems like a good situation for me, at least for the next few months. I had a feedback from a minister friend of mine who has been listening to the podcast, and she said, "I'm getting a little tired of your self-depreciation." That is completely fair. I'm sure it is tiring, and I apologize if it is not particularly entertaining. I think it's my way of just trying to let the audience know that I'm not an expert, because I feel besieged by emails and offers, by church consultants, by writers and seminary professors putting out stuff, and books and ebooks all purporting to have the answers. And in my career, I have just found that so few of them have answers that really fit me, my understanding of ministry, or what the church is. So I guess the self-depreciation is defensiveness on my part, because I'm trying to clue everybody else in that that is not me. And I suspect that there are a lot more clergy out there like me who are trying to do their best and trying to learn. And it's overwhelming, and just a lot of the things that need to change in mainline Christianity, maybe evangelical Christianity, I don't know, are just beyond us. No clergy person, however skilled, is going to be able to figure all that stuff out. I still get messages from folks who are new to the podcast, concerned, I appreciate it, for my sake, about me calling myself a failed minister. Just to remind you what I think I mean by failure, no doubt I do struggle with feelings of failure when you end up unemployed at 47. After working your ass off trying to be a minister, and you wonder, what have you been killing yourself for? You definitely have those feelings. However, what I'm trying to say when I use the expression failed minister is that I've had a pretty screwed up understanding of success. In my defense, I think that that screwed up understanding of success has been fed by a lot of stuff from consultants and books and messages that, if you're a minister, you're bombarded with, that, you know, teach you that success in ministry is attracting a large number of people to your church, and success in ministry means lots of money, good building, stuff like that. I continue to struggle with that, to feel like none of that was particularly what Jesus was up to. If you're a Christian, at least you wouldn't call Jesus a failure. I am continuing to wrestle with, what does success mean if you have felt called to ministry? And my sense is that when you have a job paid for by a church, your definition of success means continuing the work of that church, helping that institution to survive. But again, I'm not sure that that's what Jesus was up to. And I'm not sure that's the future of Christianity. I think that whatever success looks like, it is not what mid to late 20th century understandings of success mean for churches and for ministry. I continue to call myself a failed minister because I'm wrestling with that. What does it mean? If you're going to really try to be a follower of Jesus, does any traditional understanding of success really matter? I'm not alone in feeling bombarded by stuff from experts, especially right now. I think what I'm seeing posted by clergy friends and on clergy groups is a lot of clergy feeling that they have been besieged by experts telling them how to do church right now. Feeling already overwhelmed as they feel the weight of trying to hold congregations together and have some forward momentum. And what's it going to look like 2 months down the road, 3 months down the road, 6 months down the road, if this thing continues as I expect it will? We're either going to have to find ways for ministers and churches to have new understandings of what church is going to be like for now, or we're going to have a whole lot of burnout clergy. Maybe if you're not a clergy person and you're listening to this, you can relate a bit by getting those nonstop articles on how to be productive during this time while you're working from home with small kids and somehow going to begin a new diet and new exercise routine and take on the hobbies you've always wanted to do and binge watch all the shows you've been meaning to binge watch. I think it's sort of the same thing. What I can tell is that if you are working from home and you've got small kids who are not in school, then you are really suffering right now, and it's overwhelming. My advice would be to give yourself a break, quit trying to be productive, and do the stuff that whatever it takes to bring you joy and give you rest right now, because the anxiety and strain I think we're all under is much greater than it seems. We've got this idea that those of us who are fortunate enough to work from home are somehow on vacation, and you are surely not on vacation. Not if your kids are out of school and home and you're trying to be their teacher and their parent and their entertainer all at the same time. This is not a vacation. Well, I got an email this week from the Alban Institute, if you're not familiar with it. Alban was a long-time consulting group and training for clergy producing books. They eventually could not make it on their own anymore, kind of merged with stuff happening at Duke Divinity School. It helps when you can merge with a nonprofit educational institution with a heavy endowment. The cynical part of me says that all the consulting, all the ideas for mainline Christianity and Judaism were not enough to keep them viable financially and survive. And that should have been an indicator for all of us that a whole lot of this consulting stuff and training was not going to be enough to stem the tide of the great cultural change killing the mainline church and moderate Judaism. But anyway, this one was by a rabbi and was coming out of a book that he had written called Tomorrow's Synagogue Today. However, everything he's saying is applicable for churches, and these are the kind of things that I've heard all my life as a professional minister. Really, since I went to seminary, 25 plus years ago, I've been hearing these same things, that we are in a time and have been in a time of great transition culturally. One might argue in 2020 that really the transitions he's describing have already happened, but here are his bullet points. He said this cultural transformation happening has these characteristics: transition from the age of organizations toward the age of networks, from credentialed professionals toward avocational experts, from hierarchical control toward individual autonomy, from exclusivity toward inclusivity, from monopolization of knowledge toward democratization of knowledge, from assuring a fee-for-service economy toward expecting a free for service economy. And if you're in business, you've probably heard all sorts of stuff. What I've discovered is that usually in books and seminars on church management and how to do church, they're usually 10 to 20 years behind what's happening in the business world. So all of those transitions may be old hat for you if you're in business, but I've certainly seen those things in churches. It's why we have so many churches closing, buildings going up for sale, and most churches are in the crisis they're in is basically maybe the boomers who have enough guilt keep coming, but beyond that, nobody in younger generations is showing up. A clergy friend of mine said to me, there's a trend going on, a trend that is basically the larger and the largest churches will continue to get bigger while the smaller churches will just die. And a lot of that has to do with those changes of people in a consumer economy expecting not a fee for service where they contribute or tithe to their congregation, but a free for service. Only the largest churches are able to provide things for free. Somehow they get enough giving or have enough endowments to keep it going. And they have the money to do the technology and the networks to keep people connected and involved. But the question is, of course, what is lost? What is lost in terms of having a small community of believers who have got your back, who care for you, who offer you accountability, but also offer you support during the hard times in life, that give you grace and mercy, that more than anything else show you the love of God? What happens when those are gone? Maybe a better question is, where are people getting that? Are they getting that from anywhere else? If I were going back in time, telling folks from my seminary days what to do, and if I could tell them now, especially, I would just say, you should expect to be bivocational. Be trained to have another job besides your ministry job. By the end of your career, if you're expecting to support yourself and a family and what a single congregation can offer, you're dreaming. It's just not going to happen. I certainly wish I had other marketable skills, because that's where we're at right now. You know, in a world where one can pick and choose, thanks to technology, whatever one needs, why even commit to a congregation? Again, that democratization of knowledge. If you can Google and connect in all sorts of ways to get the sort of spirituality and community that you want, why even become a church member and deal with all the hassles of church membership? I certainly have experienced that basically anybody younger than a boomer, and probably even boomers, don't even understand what church membership means in congregations like the ones I've served, with congregational polity, where every member gets a vote on the big decisions. There's no bishop telling them what to do. Then what happens when you don't have enough people who are actually members to make those kind of decisions? That's the reality now. I tell people that my wife is post-church, maybe even post-Christian in a sense. She has always kept me in check when I, as a minister, would ask her about starting a new Bible study or doing something on Sunday night or this or that. And I would get a response from her that would say, no, why would anyone want to go to that? My answer was always, well, because people should go to it. I was raised by a minister father and a builder generation. I was raised that you did it because you ought to do it, and it's right, and you should. And also, we'll lay on a little guilt and shame on top of that, too, to reinforce it. I guess I was attracted to my wife because my own mother always resented the role of being a minister's wife. Jen, it's turned out to be a blessing, had already detached from the last church that I was serving. In the end, when I was getting criticized for everything, one of the criticisms whispered behind my back, which of course got back to me, was my wife wasn't even coming to church. If he couldn't even get his own wife to come to church, what does that tell you? Well, it wasn't easy, because in my egotistical understanding of things, I had thought that my wife and kids would somehow have all their spiritual needs met in the church where I was called to. And I should have known from my own experience that it's not a lot of fun to hear sermons from your own father, much less your spouse. It's not so great to look for spiritual leadership from your family member the way you would from a pastor who's outside your family. But it ended up being good, because when all the nastiness happened, my wife was already detached enough that she didn't have the same sense of betrayal that I did. For her, this was my job, my calling, not her faith community. And like I said, that helped a lot. I could focus on my own sense of betrayal and not have to feel she was betrayed too. Because Jen has been on a spiritual journey where she has found her own ways of connecting, doing through technology and networking, the way I think most people are doing it now. For her, the writer that's meant so much has been Eckhart Tolle. So she found an Eckhart Tolle meetup. She goes to a minimalism meetup. She goes to a caregiver group offered by a nonprofit. She walks to a nearby ELCA church, and she gives and she participates, but most likely she'll never join. For her, the walk to church is as much a part of her spiritual experience as participating in a Bible study or a worship service is. That's her connection to a lot of different things, a lot of different groups. I have to say that seems pretty healthy to me. What it also means is local congregations, at least not the big ones, can no longer expect to provide all these things, to be the one-stop shop to meet everybody's spiritual needs, because they don't have that monopoly over where their members are getting their information. That also means that they have less involvement and less loyalty. Back even right before all the crap hit the fan at my last church, I had a conversation with a minister friend of mine, the esteemed Reverend Aaron Roberts, I'll give him credit, over in Prairie Village. I was coming to grips with the fact that I had worked really hard, yet I didn't feel like the congregation I was in was going to be able to make the dramatic changes necessary to survive, much less thrive, in the future. And Aaron said to me, there's a wave hitting mainline Christianity, maybe all of Christianity in America, that is bigger than all of us. It is a tidal wave of cultural change that none of us is going to stop. He and I are both about the same age. He said, how many churches are even going to exist in 20 years because of how dramatically our culture is changing? And he said, you can be the best minister in the world and still get swept away, or at least watch what you're contributing to get swept away. And that was reassuring to me that I wasn't a failure in the way I thought I was. But it also rang true to what I hear from Jesus, the idea that so many churches have been storing up their riches in storehouses, in barns, like the parable goes, only to have them all swept away. And so many churches have looked for security not in God, not in following what Jesus wanted and did, but by building better buildings and endowments and fundraising and that sort of thing. Well, this big cultural wave is going to sweep it all away. There's no telling what will be left standing. The issue is not so much building things here on earth that will survive, but our faithfulness and making sure that what we're doing is really about what God is doing. Remember, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm looking for somebody to save me. I'll take volunteers. Just remember, if you're looking for somebody to save you, don't look at me. In the end, this podcast is my way of processing and struggling. If it resonates with anybody else, that's great. I hope it does. Hope I'm not alone. But ultimately, this isn't going to save you. There's only one being in the universe that can do that. This podcast is brought to you by Crokesbury Books online store. Are you a dying mainline church in need of transformation without your members having to sacrifice anything or change anything about the way they've done church for the last 75 years? Then Crokesbury Books is the online bookstore for you. Maybe the reason your church is dying and kids don't want to go to it is because they are immersed in young adult novels that celebrate the devil's work. Remember, probably the reason your church is dying is because you've become too liberal, and your church needs to swing back to the conservative side. What you need to do to keep your young people coming to church is give them lots of shame and guilt, so they'll stick around and feel bad if they don't show up. You need to immerse them in the world of Narnia and show them how thinly disguised Christian allegory based upon mid-century British upper-class norms is God's will for their recreational reading. A new series by C.S. Lewis's third cousin's great-nephew's ex-wife will ensure your kids avoid the snares of Satan. Oh, I mean the White Witch. Book one is called Smashing the Golden Compass. Aslan and the Pevensey children travel to the world of the atheist Philip Pullman's His Dark Materials novels. A scary part happens when the armored polar bear claws to death Edmund. But who liked Edmund anyway? His addiction to Turkish delight shows he was of weak moral character. Later on, Peter captures Lyra, but she and Lucy strike up a friendship and start doing all sorts of things that only boys should do. Fearing that the two headstrong girls might be romantically attracted to each other, Peter institutes strict rules about female behavior. Susie and Lucy have to stop using weapons, riding horses, and they have to learn to knit. Mrs. Beaver doesn't like it, so she is turned into a hat. Lyra uses the kerfuffle over Mrs. Beaver as a chance to escape. But thankfully, Aslan ends up devouring Lyra, Lord Asriel, and all the other little godless heathen atheists. Oh, and Aslan kills a bunch of Calormenes because we all know that they were really Arabs who wanted to institute Sharia law in Narnia. Book 2 of the series is called Harry Potter and His Hallowed Death. Aslan and the Pevensey children enroll in Hogwarts. Prince Caspian outs Dumbledore as gay and leads a coup to overthrow the headmaster and institute God's intended family values, such as sleeping with your slave girl the way Abraham did. Hermione tries to intervene, but Susan blows the horn she got from Father Christmas back in Narnia, and Hermione can't hear herself to cast spells. Peter puts her in her place by forcing her at sword point to eat an entire Weasley skeeving snack box. Harry perhaps could have fought off the Narnians, but he was feeling misunderstood and was too busy mooning over snotty Cho Chang to care. In the end, Aslan eats all the satanic witches and wizards. And oh, he sends Susan to hell for wearing lipstick and stockings, just like he really did in The Last Battle, the final book in the Chronicles of Narnia. In Book 3, The Return of the Talking Lion, Aslan and the surviving Pevensey children go to Middle-earth. There, they kill all the elves for being tree-worshipping New Age Gaia lovers. Then they kill all the hobbits for the sin of gluttony. Finally, they meet Aragorn and decide he is such a model of white, heterosexual manhood that it's okay for them to go back to Narnia. You may be thinking that J.R.R. Tolkien and C.S. Lewis were friends. So why would the Narnians brutalize Middle-earth? But we all know that Tolkien's books were filled with pagan mythology, and God-fearing people should hate all things from New Zealand. Coming later this year, Aslan goes to Panem and has his own games of hunger. He'll eat Katniss Everdeen for daring to be a female leading a political movement. Order these books now at crokesbury.edu via our online Bible College bookstore website. You'll be sure to keep your young people around and demonstrate the evils of reading secular books. Remember, we are glad to send you ebooks if you are afraid of catching the coronavirus from your UPS man. Remember, there's no such thing as a UPS woman, just a harlot dressed in brown. By ebooks, we mean the text of books downloaded to 5 1/4 floppy disks that originally had Zork on them from the early 1980s. We will ship them in a box filled with sugar crystals dyed blue in honor of white Jesus' naturally blue eyes, so that the disks aren't damaged during transit. We will ship your box of blue crystal encased floppy disks from our distribution center in Juarez, Mexico. Unfortunately, you will need to pick up your ebooks at a U.S. Customs office, so make sure to share your blue sugar crystals with the patriots guarding our borders. We recommend picking up some fried chicken at Los Pollos Locos for the ride home. Try Crokesbury Books today. Hey, Save Me podcast listeners. Well, the week has gotten away from me, and I'm getting this podcast episode out later than has been my norm thus far. Starting a new job, kind of need to gear up, and energy's going in a different way. Trying to figure out steep learning curve to do what so many other clergy are out there doing, trying to connect with their congregations online and via phone calls. It has been a week. I'm not going to have my usual second half on this episode, but we've got something great coming up. Jeremy Rutledge, friend of mine, minister at Circular Congregational Church, a United Church of Christ church in Charleston, South Carolina, put out last week an audio reflection. I thought it was really good and couldn't get it out of my mind. He reads a bit from Thomas Merton and offers his reflections on the great Trappist monk from Kentucky. Merton has always been one of those authors I know I should like, but never have particularly found that helpful. But so many people I love and respect love the guy and his writings that I've always felt like the problem is me. But however, hearing the words in my friend Jeremy's voice during these circumstances, during this quarantine, it was much more meaningful for me. So I got his audio, and by permission, I'm including it in this podcast. Before we get to that, however, I need to remind you about connecting through social media. I hope that if you're a Facebook person, you will like and follow the Save Me Podcast Facebook page. You just have to search for it. Also, I'm on Twitter at Save Me Podcast 1, the number 1, Save Me Podcast 1. You can always listen to the podcast on our Anchor page, which is what I'm using to put this out. It's also up on a bunch of streaming platforms that I'm not familiar with, but it is also up on iTunes. And all I know is that every podcast I listen to begs its listeners to make a review on iTunes. Apparently that helps other people find you and separates the wheat from the chaff of the limitless podcasts out there. If you do iTunes, a review would be a huge help. 5-star review would be even better. You won't lie that much. I guarantee you won't go to hell because of it, because God would know that you were doing an act of charity for my sake. Speaking of charity for my sake, if you want to join those who have become financial supporters of the Save Me podcast, you can do so. Just go to anchor.fm/save-me-podcast. A lot of dashes there. On that page, there is a button where you can click to be a supporter and decide how much you want to give and how often. And it still feels cheesy for me to ask for help, considering all the need that's out there right now. But I guess I'm not too proud to ask, since I just did. I've been really humbled by those who have become financial supporters so far and like what I'm doing and feel like it should go out in the world. Ursel Harrison was my first. Check him out at Pinnacle Leadership Consulting Group for Congregations. Also, I had a few other friends chip in a few bucks on a monthly basis. Beth Harris McMahon, more influential in my life than she'll ever know, is on staff at the seminary I went to and is one of those people whom I just consider an all-around good person. And I wish there were more people like Beth Harris McMahon out in the world. Also, Ruth Wagner Bradshaw, Ruth, who I think I gave a shout out to last week's episode. Ruth is up in Wisconsin serving a United Church of Christ congregation up there. She's got a nice digital feed of her service on their YouTube channel that's put together very well. I recommend it. Ruth is great. She's one of the few clergy I know who I would actually want as my pastor. Also, last but certainly not least, Jeff Sims, who I went to seminary with. Jeff is a pastor of Covington Presbyterian Church down in Covington, Louisiana. And Jeff, after having done a long stint of chaplaincy down in Nolens, is now pastoring a PCUSA church down there. And reconnecting with Jeff and just the fact that he would actually enjoy the podcast enough to want to support it means everything to me. I'm grateful. I'm humbled by all four of you. I'm tempted to make all kinds of jokes about the poor financial decisions you make, but thanks. I appreciate it. If you're listening at all, know that I appreciate you making time. There's obviously a billion things out there that you can occupy your brain with. This at all meant anything to you, know I'm grateful. Are you tired of trying to social distance at the grocery store? Is the mask you made out of a bra and rubber bands beginning to chafe your ears when you shop at Walmart? During the coronavirus outbreak, grocery shopping means risking your life. So why not let some nameless person, who will remain unknown to you, risk their life to bring you your next meal? Jonas Nightingale, maker of the inflatable pulpit, wants to introduce you to his next ministry, Red Apron Meals. You may have heard of Blue Apron pre-prepared meals, but now you have a Christian choice of ready-to-cook meals delivered right to your home, Red Apron. It's red because it's been sanctified by the blood of Christ. Each week you subscribe to Red Apron, 10-year membership required, you will receive a ready-to-cook meal based upon the foods of the Bible. Mondays are manna and quail night. Each and every piece of bread we send you has been thrown off the roof of our processing facility, so it falls from heaven just like manna. You can have a quail sandwich with our sliced pieces of quail and some manna bits. Fans say our quail tastes just like Chick-fil-A sandwiches, fished out of a dumpster. Tuesdays, you get to eat like the prophet Ezekiel. We will send you a scroll of lamentations of your very own. Have a bite, and you'll say, just like Ezekiel, that it tastes like honey in your mouth. One reviewer described it as like chewing up newspaper soaked in Splenda. Wednesday, you'll feel like you're on Mount Sinai with the idolatrous Israelites. Just as if you worshipped your own golden calf, we'll be like Moses and grind up gold and make you drink a gold smoothie. We've been told our gold smoothies taste just like we ground up pyrite and dumped it in a barrel of wastewater from a fracking site. Now that's what we call a golden review. Thursday, you'll eat like the prophet Elijah when we send you on a never-ending supply of flour and oil. Refills of flour and oil sold separately. Act now, and we will even take that flour and oil directly from a widow suffering during a famine. One fan of this meal said, it tastes like sand and motor oil mixed together. Motor oil? Ha! We wish. Our oil is all natural and doesn't contain fossil fuels. We get it fresh out of the grease trap of Pyro Bubba's hot wings. Friday, you'll enjoy some loaves and fish, just like the 12 disciples and the multitudes gathered around Jesus. You'll receive the finest anchovies and enjoy them on whole grain buns. One of our customers described it in an online review as if we picked off anchovies from a failed pizza delivery and stuck them on hamburger buns left over from a rained-out picnic. Our customers sure love to make jokes about our fine food. On Saturday, it's locust and honey pita pockets. Get on your camel hair clothing because you're eating like John the Baptist. Meals also available for conservative Methodists, non-denominational evangelicals, and certain Presbyterians, not just Baptists. A recent online review said it looks like they got out the Splenda again, but this time just sprinkled it on cockroaches. Red Apron Management wants you to know, just because our distribution facility failed its last 3 health inspections does not mean we have cockroaches. Not many of them. Actually, we don't know how many of them, because we turn on the lights and they scatter before we can count them. Finally, Sunday night is fun day night when we send you ravens that will feed you just like in the book of 1 Kings. Ravens will fly into your home with meat and bread, sure to fill you up like the hungriest prophets of old. We also think your hungriest little prophets will like this meal. We at Red Apron strongly deny recent news reports about pigeons being thrown at customer houses with generic bologna scotch tape to them. Any such incidences are purely coincidental and can no way be traced back to Red Apron or Jonas Nightingale World Salvation Ministries in Coral Gables, Florida. Don't eat like a heathen. Try Red Apron today. Remember, our apron is sanctified by the blood of Christ.
Good morning, friends. This is Jeremy, and I wanted to send a little midweek love and aloha to you on this rainy Wednesday morning in Charleston. We've all been staying home for several weeks now, and if you're like me, you may have begun to miss the people that you ordinarily see. This morning I've been thinking of the man who always smiles and says hello when I go to the gym. I've been thinking of the woman with whom I speak at the bread counter a couple of times a week. We joke about how much bread our kids eat. And I've been thinking of the servers at the local banh mi restaurant where we often stop at the end of a long day to pick up dinner. And when I think about these ordinary friends, I'm reminded of something that Thomas Merton wrote when he detailed a kind of conversion experience. He wrote that what happened to him was that he saw a kind of light in every person. And once he saw it, it changed everything. So I thought this morning I could read you a few lines from Thomas Merton. And these lines could be a blessing on our day and maybe a blessing on all those we love and are thinking of in this moment. Here's what Merton wrote. In Louisville, at the corner of 4th and Walnut, in the center of the shopping district, I was suddenly overwhelmed with the realization that I loved all these people, that they were mine and I theirs, that we could not be alien to one another, even though we were total strangers. It was like waking from a dream of separateness. And this sense of liberation from an illusory difference was such a relief and such a joy to me that I almost laughed out loud. And if only everybody could realize this, but it cannot be explained. There is no way of telling people that they are all walking around shining like the sun. There are no strangers. And then it was as if I suddenly saw the secret beauty of all their hearts, the depths of their hearts, where neither sin nor desire nor self-knowledge can reach, the core of their reality, the person that each one is in God's eyes. If only they could see themselves as they really are. If only we could see each other that way all the time. I have no program for this seeing. It is only given. But the gate of heaven is everywhere. Amen, friends. And aloha to you, wherever you are.